The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Da una lontana galassia stanno per arrivare due intrepidi eroi.
Io sono Jonathan e lui è Mario. Mario e Mario, sempre vicino a voi.
E perché non vi chiamate entrambi Mario?
Due guerrieri senza macchie e senza paura.
Johnny, vai a prenderlo.
E se mi spara?
Difensori dei deboli e degli oppressi.
Guarda lui, è da ieri che sta qui, ancora non l'ha beccato.
Come ancora?
Con un destino da compiere.
Grazie per aver chiamato il servizio di robot assistenza.
Aggiustare l'universo.
Ripariamo robot, androidi, intelligenze artificiali e ogni genere di elettrodomestico.
Per favore, fermate quell'assassino.
Ma voi siete pazzi, siete dei cialtroni.
Sono del cuore, nessuna l'arma.
Vi prego, dovete aiutarmi.
Cielo, ma quello è un disgregatore.
Prossimamente su questi schermi.
No, veramente non si vede nulla. Si sente?
Non si vede nulla?
No, niente. È un'audioserie.
Ah, allora, prossimamente sulle vostre casse.
Vabbè, però glielo dico subito, questo intervento è fuori garanzia, chiaro?
Thank you.
I heard talking. It must stop. What I want to do is try and get an early, get something going to draw people in. So I've done this in a couple of conventions. When I do this, could you people clap and cheer? Just this side, could you clap and cheer? Okay. And when I point at you, could you whoop, go woo, woo, okay? Okay, so let's have the clap and cheer. Whoop, whoop, whoop. Okay, and on my cue, walk together. One, two, three. Thank you. No, people are looking now. Ears are pricking up all over the place. Ooh, what's going on in there? Yeah. So what I want you to do is basically anytime I do anything, do that. So if I kind of tap my nose, I want you all to do that. Okay. It's going to be a very long hour. Thank you for coming. My name is Ian MacDonald. I am a science fiction writer, mostly science fiction, and I'm based in Hollywood, County Down, Northern Ireland, not Hollywood, not Hollywood, USA. I've scared somebody off already. Oh no, don't make us clap again. Based in Hollywood, Northern Ireland. I've been writing science fiction for... Well, my first novel came out in 1988, Desolation Road, so you do the math, as they say, but it's quite a long time ago. Anyway, it's my great pleasure to be here, back again in this lovely town with you lovely people, this time from all over Europe. Great to see you all. And I'm just going to... Please think of questions, or it is going to be a very long hour. And if we get stuck, if we run really short on material, I will race people around the room. Don't think I won't. What I'm going to talk about is what I love about science fiction. That's a slightly different question from why I love it or why I write it, but what I love about it. Because it's a very, very different form of writing and viewing and thinking from other forms of written and visual art. There are things that are unique to this genre that you don't get in others. There are values and there are emotions it generates that other ones don't. And ultimately all... Oh, he's coming. Oh, no, he's going. Okay. I thought I'd done something there, and he was about to come. Correct me. Ultimately, when we write, when we tell visual stories, when we perform, it's all about the emotion. We're there to generate emotion in some way or other. I'm not interested in the profound depths of the human psyche. I don't think we have any profound depths. Talk to a 6-year-old and you know everything there is to know about the profound depths of the human psyche. There's this interesting school of psychology at the moment that rejects that kind of 19th century Greek-based thinking of a hierarchy of the mind. That there is, at the top, there are the higher intellectual levels, then there is the subconscious, then there is the id seething around at the bottom, full of passions and desires. To me, that comes from Greek thinking about hierarchy, and I think it's a deeply, deeply harmful way of thinking of the way we are. In a lot of Chinese and Indian thinking, we don't have depths. We are interconnected shallow pools. We have different aspects to ourselves, different emotional states that connect with each other. We are wide, but we are shallow. We don't have these hidden depths. And I kind of find that very liberating because it frees you to do or be whatever you are, because any one pool is as valid as any other. There is no hierarchy of the top. You know, the superego is great, the id dirty and bad. We are just interconnected pools. I find that very refreshing. And it kind of brings me back, I'm thinking out loud here, it kind of brings me back to the emotions of science fiction, because these are different pools from what you get in other forms of literature. I love writing with characters in them. It's always all about the characters. It's what we love at the start and at the end. It's those people, you know, what we can get from them, why we hate them, why they annoy us, but why we care about what happens to them. But for me, there are other emotions that only SF can press. And one of them is the big stuff. SF does the big stuff very well. Old movies. Does everyone remember Close Encounters of the Third Kind? Steven Spielberg's film, yeah. And it's very good on the big stuff because it's about UFOs coming to aliens contacting Earth. And first of all, you see little zip, 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 little flashing lights zipping around, and then slightly bigger flashing lights zipping around. And okay, is that it? And then at the end, they're there, and they're about to play the five tones. Dee, 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 dee. Ooh, yeah, and there were shivers up people's spines there for doing that. You know, and the spaceship comes over Devil's Tower, and it's big. But it's not just big. It's bigger than you think, because it keeps coming. And it's absolutely enormous. And I'm sitting there going, this is what I come to science fiction for, the big stuff. That's bigger than you can imagine. It also has one of my all-time great science fiction moments. Anyway, the big space, and it's covered in lights, and it comes, and it's amazing, and it's huge, and then it turns upside down, and comes down. This is huge and amazing. And it touches down. But I've had that shot of big stuff, big wonder. And then the door opens. Does anyone ever remember this bit? Like a ramp goes down. And these tiny aliens scuttle out. And then these very big, tall, long, thin aliens crouch down and go under the door. So they've built this huge, massive, shining spaceship, you know, miles across, full of lights, but they can't build a door that opens wide enough to let the tall aliens out. And that's the kind of thing I love, in that they'll set up something wonderful and then do something very small and very human at the end, you know, that the guys go, "Feck, the door's stuck, I have to bend under the door." Big stuff. First Star Trek movie, which was not a great film. Anyway, Star Trek, the movie. But it's the bit where the Enterprise is flying over V'ger, and it's not just big, it's bigger than you can think. It's absolutely enormous. Because you think the Enterprise is big. No, it's flying over this immense starship about the length of this room to scale. Yet again, that kind of moment of sense that only science fiction does of it's not just big, it's bigger than you can imagine. It's that slow reveal. In books, these are all old books. I don't read as much science fiction as I should. It's Rendezvous with Rama, Arthur C. Clarke's Rendezvous with Rama. And they go through all the mess. It's not great on woman, Rendezvous with Rama, I must say. It's not great for chimps either. But they arrive on Rama and they work out also how to dock on Rama and how to dock safely and find the entrance port. And in they go and they launch flares. Rama is this huge cylindrical, basically empty space habitat starship that's arrived in the solar system. And they launch flares down, and they just see little flickering bits of Rama. And then there's a moment when all the lights come on, and they see it in its... And it's the same thing. This isn't big. This is bigger than I could possibly imagine. And that's one emotion that I love from science fiction that you don't get anywhere else. That's one of the things I love about science fiction. Another thing, it was Paul Cornell put it rather well. There's a band called the Kaiser Chiefs, of whom you may have heard, or maybe not. But they have a song with the lyric, "Oh my God, I can't believe it. I've never been this far from home before." The song is really about white English kids on gap years. But for me, good science fiction does that as well, that all of a sudden, something very strange but rather wonderful is happening, and you don't feel totally safe, and you don't feel on a sure footing, that everything is slightly different from the way we think it is. And I kind of last got that feeling from Philip Pullman, his Dark Materials. I see nods there. I love the first three books. The second ones are terrible. And I see not they are. They're far too long, and yeah, they're just terrible. The first ones, it's the moment where you realise that Lyra has this, her demon is basically her external soul, and this is a world where people have external souls, and it's that kind of, it all looks familiar, you know, it's England, there's Oxford, but people have external souls. And that little shift is enough to go, ooh, okay, I don't know where I am anymore. Everything is very different. Oh my God, I can't believe it. I've never been this far from home before. Those little moments of something that's totally different and totally alien that just gives you that emotion that you don't get from anything else. It's a great shame that they still haven't done his Dark Materials right on screen. The movie had some good bits. Mrs. Coulter was terrific. And the BBC version, did anyone see the BBC? Yet again, Mrs. Coulter was terrific in that as well. But it just didn't feel the way the books did. I also wasn't convinced by Lord Asriel in the TV version. At all. It was Daniel Craig in the movie. He looked like Lord Asriel. It just didn't have that kind of sense of this is familiar but very, very different that I get from really good parallel world science fiction. That is the second emotion. How long have I got left, guys? Someone's going to be running around the room here. That's the second emotion I kind of get from it. And another one is the sense of the deep. I talked about this in a couple of years back up in Stranimondi, up in Milan. Did any survivors from that? I'm a member of a group called the Long Now Foundation. You're based in San Francisco. There's a member. You are Long Nower. Yeah. I would love to go to their cocktail bar. Yeah. Yeah, great. What they do is, and this is something science fiction does well, is our culture is kind of... Particularly now, our culture is cursed with short-term thinking. Our economics or our financial markets, not our economy. Our economy is much bigger than just financial marketing. Are based hugely on short-term gain and short-term profit, turning over money very quickly, extracting money very quickly, and then moving on. Long-term investment is seen very much as kind of the business of governments who can afford to invest in long-time projects. Our politics, particularly, it's one of the curses of democracies that It's a great system. It makes mistakes, but sure, the mistakes are kind of are part of the process. You know, they're a cost of democracy. You get the politicians you vote for, but part of the curse is that our political cycle is tied to the electoral cycle. So every 4 or 5 or however long it takes, the whole thing revolves around again. Parties are thinking about getting re-elected more than actually governing. So the electoral cycle drives the whole thing, yet again, short-term thinking. But the Long Now Foundation is about long-term thinking. And it's about thinking longer than our lifetimes. Those of you who are blessed with children know what that's like already. You are investing in future beyond your own lifetimes, projects beyond your own lifetimes. We can think about the past very easily. We have no problem imagining, ancient Rome, ancient Mesopotamia. We have no problem thinking, back thousands of years to the civilizations of the Indus Valley. But we can't look forward that way. Our imagination stops. We have difficulty imagining what a future would be like 3,000 years from now, whenever we are gone, let alone millions of years in the past. So the Long Now is about encouraging long-term thinking through various projects. They have one called the Clock of the Long Now, which is, the name was given by Brian Eno, the musician. And it's a clock being built inside a mountain, which is the most science fictional thing I know of. It's a clock that will run for 10,000 years, 10,000 year clock. And it ticks once a year, and it chimes dong once a century. And it will tick away inside this mountain for 10,000 years. Tick, dong. I imagine every 10 centuries you get a lovely chime, ding dong, ding dong, every 1,000 years. And this kind of raises the question, well, how do you power a clock that will run for 10,000 years? And the answer I find deeply, deeply hopeful. It's human powered. People go and wind up the Clock of the Long Now every year. So what it's basically saying is, there will be people around to keep this clock running for 10,000 years. They will know about the project. There may be a community, thousands of years from now, 5,000 years from now, there's a community that's been there for 5,000 years. They just exist to service the clock inside the mountain. But it's very hopeful because it says there will be people there. They will have a sense of history. They will have a sense of future purpose as well. I find that very hopeful. And in my current work, Hopeland, did you notice a slightly glazed look in my eye? Hopeland. It's taken about 4 years. It's actually taken 13 years, my agent told me, from pitching the idea, and I'll be finishing it in September. So it's a 13-year work. That's worthy of the Long Now. But part of my argument is that the only solutions we really have to what's happening with the climate, what's happening with cultures, is to encourage long-term thinking. So it has aspects like there's a country house in Ireland where there's basically a water-powered machine that is playing a piece of music that will last for 1,000 years. Take 1,000 years for this piece of music to play through. It's all little cogs and wheels and bells and things. And that's not as strange as it sounds. I can't remember names anymore. But if you Google this, there's a church in Germany, lovely little brick Lutheran church in Germany, and it's playing a piece of music that will take 800 years to play through. It's written by the musician John Cage, the one who famously did the 4 minutes, the 34 seconds, which is 4 minutes, 34 seconds of people not playing music. This one's called As Slowly As Possible, and it has no time signature, so you can play it as slowly as possible. And they've built an organ, electrically powered organ, and you just hang a weight and it presses a key down and it makes an organ note. And as you need notes, you build extra bits of the organ. When you don't need a note, you take a bit away. But it will take 800 years. You can hear this online, except I can't remember the name of it. But with a bit of Googling, you can find this piece of music. It will take 800 years to play through. For the first 5 years in the actual musical notation, there's a rest. So they did nothing for 5 years, and then hung a sandbag, a weight, on the first organ key. And that's the thing that's deeply science fictional to me. It thinks about big time. There's a English author, Olaf Stapleton, and he thinks really, 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 really big. He was writing in the 1930s, 1940s, and it's all big time stuff. There's a fantastic book called First and Last Men, and it's the history of life in the solar system, and it goes billions of years into the future. Fantastic book, mind-boggling, depressing, because everyone dies. But that wasn't quite big enough for him, so he did one called Star Maker, which posits the history of this universe, and then sees it as part of an endless chain of universes evolving. But it's big, big time stuff. If you want to kind of a sobering experience, there are several videos on YouTube. They're usually done by wannabe animators. There are videos on YouTube that shows the timeline of the universe from the Big Bang through us to, well, they're not quite sure what, to the point where all matter collapses into black holes, to the point where all the black holes evaporate into photons, the place where those photons eventually disintegrate, until the point where there's a quantum fluctuation and a new universe appears like that. And it is truly Indian, like Indian theology. It's like truly Hindu mysticism amounts of time. Don't do it when you're hungover. It's deeply depressing, but strangely liberating at the same time, because we are here. I mean, we are at the early days of the universe. In fact, not even the early days of the universe. We are here in the first, about first 5 or 6 hours of the universe, we exist in this slot of big, big time. That's the thing that science fiction does as well. It makes you think about long time in the past. Makes you think about long time in the future as well. It's the only genre that could really do it. And another thing about science fiction that I love is it's the literature that deals with change. Interesting thing, it happened a few years ago in mainstream literature in Britain, was the writers had huge problems coping with technology. This is true. They'll get mobile phones and social media and not know how the hell to write about that, because it didn't fit their model of storytelling and of character development. They'd no idea what to do with it. So a lot of novels were set in the past, particularly for England, the Second World War. Kelsey Breeze. Then a newer generation of writers, digital natives. I hate that expression, digital natives. But a lot grew up quite happy with, they'd grown up with computers. They were there for the arrival of mobile tech. They were there for the arrival of social media, and are perfectly happy with it and can incorporate it into their stories. So you're getting new forms of stories that have taken that change in mainstream literature. But there was a generation that just didn't get it at all and couldn't write anything and had to retreat into the past. But I would submit that if you are writing a book about a mainstream novel about the impact of social media, about technology, all the about our connected world today, you are writing science fiction. You're writing about the impact of technology on people's lives, and you're writing about change. That's like what it should be to me, should be, Ian says. For me, that's the heart blood of science fiction, is it's about change, when something happened, when everything changed. Anyone watch Black Mirror? Yeah, Charlie Brooker's show. It's very, very good on... Oh, still, I'm boring now. It's boring, take it away. But that's exactly what Black Mirror is about. It's about the impact of technology. It's about how things change. Because it's Charlie Brooker, it's always for the bad. But also, you have to make a story out of it. But it's actually not always for the bad. San Junipero was actually quite optimistic. But that's doing exactly what science fiction is supposed to do. It's science fiction that people don't think is science fiction. But we know it is, because we know the real thing when we smell it. But it's all about change. That's kind of what I enjoy space opera. I enjoy the occasional space opera. But it's not really me, because I find it a bit conservative. It's not really about how technology or science changes people's lives. It's great. It's got the big stuff. It's got big stupidly big spaceships. It's got running around and shooting, which is always great. It's got fabulously flappy aliens and wonderful lush alien planets. But it's not really about change. That's part of my problem with Star Wars. It was deeply conservative. It's kind of overthrowing the Empire in favor of a princess. Okay. Also, they only have one story on Star Wars, which is build a Death Star, blow it up. Build a bigger Death Star, blow it up. Build an even bigger Death Star, blow it up again. Yeah, and I kind of seen that. Yeah, and also, Darth Emo was rubbish. what's his name? Star Wars.
Adam Driver.
Now, he's a great actor.
Sure.
He's a great actor, but...
Kylo Ren.
But he was Darth Emo. I wanted to see more Darth Maul, because he was terrific. That guy can move. Much more Darth Maul. Bring him back. We liked him. But they all kind of fade into... Because they're just doing the same thing over and over again, only worse and worse. Bigger Death Star, worse bad guy. You know, the thing that Star Wars got right is it's the Death Star, but the real evil is Darth Vader, and they got that exactly right. So, having said that, I'm diverging into Star Wars. What was the one? Oh God, it was like the Dirty Dozen and they all died. It's the one where they get the plans for the Death Star. That movie, that was really good. Thank you. That was great. Who directed that? Oh, he's an English director. He did a fantastic. Well, his first feature. I'm going to have to look this up. Sorry, I'll keep talking while I'm Googling. He did a very low budget first feature. Called Monsters, it was called. Hang on, just Monsters, talk amongst yourselves, run around the room. I'm about to break into Master of the House here, run around the room. Monsters, things, Monsters. Film, sci fi. Yep, that's it, Monsters by Gareth Edwards. Gareth Edwards. If you see it, have a look at it. It was his first movie, very low budget, but just wonderful and a truly transcendent ending. It's alien life has... Yes, I found the premise slightly familiar, but kind of an alien probe has crashed in Mexico and basically colonized it with kind of self-seeding life. It's evolving very quickly. Yeah, this is very familiar. And a guy has to get a woman across the alien zone to the USA. And it's got no budget, but it's just the feel of it. It's the, oh my God, I, you know, it's the same thing of that estrangement thing. Oh my God, I can't believe it. It's Mexico, but I've never felt this far from Earth before. It builds beautifully into this radiant ending. Monsters by Gareth Edwards, look it up. Great film. I saw it on a plane, and I wept on a plane with people around me. But what was I talking about? Remind me, what was I talking about? Was it interesting? No. it was something to do with Star Wars, wasn't it? What space opera doesn't do for me. It doesn't have that sense of change. It doesn't have that sense of what's happening in the world. There's a school of thought about science. Ooh, I drifted away from the microphone. Don't do that. There's a school of thought about science fiction that there are two ways of looking at it. It's kind of the minimalist and the maximalist. There's minimal science fiction and maximal science fiction. And minimal takes one idea, one change, and then explores that change ferociously all the way through. Just one idea, and it kind of explores that change. At the moment, there's a British writer called Adam Roberts. Nobody reads Adam Roberts. You should. He will blow your tiny mind. He takes one idea and pursues it ferociously. He has a fantastic book called Bête, the French word bête, meaning beast. And the premise of this is, it's one idea, one change, is that animal liberation activists have implanted animals with chips, and now they can speak. So, and these chips are kind of self-replicating. And there's a fantastic, the opening scene is, it's in an abattoir, and there's an abattoir worker, a cow is pleading for its life in an abattoir. It's a fantastic scene. But it's just taking that one idea and then exploring it. And he starts with the big idea, okay, let's have a cow pleading for its life in an abattoir. And then it goes into what happens when all wildlife can talk. It's one idea explored ferociously and in ways I would never think of, that only Adam with his warped mind can imagine. That's one school. That's kind of the minimal school of science fiction. Then there's the maximal school of science fiction, which is where everything changes. I am off this school. I don't write so much about ideas as about worlds or futures. And in worlds and futures, everything changes, because everything in our world changes all the time. It's not just new technology. It's not just a pandemic. It's not just Americans pulling out of Afghanistan. It's not the rise of right-wing populism across the Western democracies. It's all of these at once. That's the kind of science fiction I like, where everything changes, and it's about how does our humanity deal with that. I did that in River of Gods, which was set in India in 2047, which isn't as far off now as it was when I wrote the book in 2004. It's creeping up on me, man. But it wasn't just one thing happening in India, it was everything happening in India. You've got genetically engineered children who age half as quickly as adults do. So when you're 20 years old, you're still physically a 10-year-old. There's a water war going on between the various states of India. There are emergent artificial intelligences. There is a third sex. There is political intrigue going on at the top of the government. Everything is happening at once. There is an artificial intelligence generated soap opera called Town and Country, Sylvia knows all this. You probably know it better than I do. As an artificial AI-generated soap opera called Town and Country, where all the characters are played by AIs. But those characters also have artificial intelligence actors. And it's the same AI as the actor and the character at the same time, because people always want to know about the actors in a soap opera. So the AIs play both the character and the actor at the same time. And there's shenanigans. I'm actually rather proud of Town and Country, the AI soap opera. And there's stuff going on inside that, and there's politics, and there's the rise of Indian nationalism. I have a terrible confession to make here. I wrote a number of novels set in the developing world. I set one in India, and then I followed up with one set in Brazil. And I set it up with one set in Turkey. And if you follow world politics, you'll see where I'm going with this, which is all the places I've written about have ended up as terrible right-wing dictatorships. So obviously I'm doing it. So I am responsible for the rise of developing world dictators. So I better stop doing that. anyway, maximal science fiction. As my particular baby, I just like to see everything at once. I want to be overwhelmed by sensation in the way that I am by... we're not doing too badly for time. In the way that I am by very big spaceships in Star Trek, or the sense of very, very deep time, or the sense of everything is changing. Where am I? I'm living in a strange world, but I can adapt that. These are all the things I love about science fiction that I don't get from other genres. I tried reading crime, but it just seemed thin to me. It's just terrible people doing terrible things. It didn't have that kind of richness that I get from SF. Okay, I do actually get it quite a lot from mainstream fiction as well, actually, that kind of sense of bigness and richness. But for me, this is essentially what science fiction is about. These are what I read science fiction for. And also I read it to connect with the world in general. I live in Northern Ireland, which for 33 years was an interesting place during what we call the Troubles of political violence in Northern Ireland, in which 3,500 people died, which doesn't sound a lot, but at the time there were only 1.2 million people in Northern Ireland, so it's a fairly hefty section of the population. And we were interesting for a while. Then peace came. And we stopped being interesting. And that was great, because you don't want to... The Chinese are right, you don't want to live in interesting times. Now with Brexit. Now with Brexit, we have become interesting again, because we don't know what's going to happen to us. We have no idea. For a while... Oh, the horror. During the French Revolution. Okay, I'm doing a lead up to a joke. During the horrors of the French Revolution and the terror and Madame Guillotine and aristocrats being wheeled off in the tumbril, there was one French writer said, "Oh, the horror. For a whole month now, I have been unable to get turbot." A fish, basically. The only thing he knows was he was unable to get fish, a turbot. And for a while, it was we had that in our local Sainsbury supermarket. Oh, the horror. Brexit is happening, but we are unable to get avocados, anchovies, and aubergines. Whatever will we do? It's been sorted out now. And... I live in a place that was interesting was boring, is slightly interesting again. But by and large, Northern Ireland is never going to be one of the great science fictional centres of the world, so I was always driven as a writer to reach out and look to other places and see how they dealt with science fictional ideas, which is what I was Francesca and I were talking about yesterday, in that I'm much more interested in reading African writers in Africa, writing about Africa, than reading American diasporan writers. Now, they have an experience, and it is a valid experience. It's different from writing in Africa, but I'm interested in knowing about Indian writers writing in India, Turkish writers writing in Turkey, West African writers writing in West Africa, East African writers writing in East Africa. That interests me much more because it connects me to the world rather than to, that thought didn't evolve, but it connects me to the world because I live in a small, insignificant corner of the world and I'm interested in what else is going on out there, and science fiction does that. It makes me feel part. It makes me feel part of a bigger thing in a way that other genres don't. The only other aspect of writing where everyone connects as much, it seems to me, is poetry. Poets talk to other poets all over the world. There's a huge global poetry community. But I like my international and intercontinental and global science fiction community. I like it that I was able to ask a favor. Yesterday at lunch, I was able to ask for somebody here, I was able to ask a favor of a friend in Bangalore. Which he was very, very happy to do. I like being connected by science fiction. These are the things I love about it. These are my drugs. The big stuff, the sense of wow, the sense of, oh my God, I've never been here. Where am I? The sense of deep time of being embedded in something that reaches far back and far future. The sense of encompassing change and celebrating change. The sense of, I've left one out, haven't I? And the sense of being connected to a global community. And that is all I have to say. And I'm open to questions. And if not, I'll get you to run around the room. Because I have 7 minutes left. 7 minutes? 7 minutes. 7 minutes. Anyone got a question? Yeah.
There's a lot of talking these days about solar fans. You know?
Yeah.
So it's a kind of science fiction that doesn't only point a finger to the dangers of the pollution or the technology, but also tries to face up dangers, proposing solutions. Do you think that science fiction could have a small, tiny impact on the evolution of the world, the real world?
I'll repeat the question in case you didn't hear it at the back. There's a movement called Solar Punk, one of Francesco's babies. Yeah, you've heard them. Which I find very interesting, which basically proposes a more optimistic outlook for humanity. Yes, that we have climate change, but we can do stuff about it, ameliorate it, get through it using appropriate technology. And the question was, do we think that science fiction can change the way we look at the world? If anyone read science fiction, if enough people read it, maybe. I think SF does its work best by stealth, by merging itself into the culture, and by becoming the new gods. You can tell I'm very anti the ancient Greeks, but if you read any novel from 19th century novels, it's full of classical allusions to the classical world, you know, gods and Greek mythology. We don't do that anymore. We talk about Marvel superheroes. They are the new gods, and this is a new pantheon, and this is the new culture to which we refer. And it's as rich as the Greeks, and a lot funnier They were not a terribly funny people, the ancient Greeks. But the Greek gods have been deposed by the new gods, who are our superheroes, who are our science fiction icons. Science fiction ideas infuse our popular culture to a way that it's kind of hard. It's so much part of our everyday life that we never step back and think about how deeply science fiction ideas have entered our kind of cultural references. If I say beam me up, everyone knows what I mean. Yeah. If you talk about the Force, everyone knows what I mean. It totally infuses our culture that way. Likewise, whenever cyberpunk arrived in the 1980s, for a brief moment, science fiction was the most exciting literature on the planet. Cyberpunk ideas. The word cyberspace, straight out of science fiction. It's a science fiction word from science fiction books. The whole idea of the Matrix, you know, that's actually a very old cyberpunk idea, long before the movie. So it affects the way, it affects our kind of global culture, and I think solarpunk is acceptable as a word. There's an American movement called Hope Punk that is not acceptable to anyone who loves the English language. Hope Punk. Hope Punk. You can't even say Hope Punk. Two plosives in a row. It's just a horrible word. Also, it's not punk. I was a punk. I know punk. That's not punk. It's not punk. If it's going to work, it's going to work slowly by working its way into the culture. And for that, the subgenre needs to do something that really gets under the skin, to create something memorable, a memorable character, a memorable idea, a memorable image, or something that kind of, or even a memorable philosophy that can be incorporated into the pantheon of SFF superhero gods that we have now. It's like Hinduism, which is a fantastic religion, and it just incorporates bits of other people's religions. Jesus is an incarnation of Vishnu. Buddha is an incarnation of Vishnu. I love that. And that's kind of the way our kind of new pantheon of gods works, incorporates ideas if they're good enough. And I think solarpunks isn't going to influence anyone by people reading stuff, but if it can generate enough of a buzz and enough of kind of a kind of mythos about it, and that enters the mindset, the noosphere, as Teilhard de Chardin called it, you know, our shared world mind. If it can enter that the way that cyberpunk did, then I think that'll be it. Then I think we have a hope. But not a punk. So that's a long-winded answer to, I hope so. How are we doing for time? One more very short question with a yes or no answer. Anyone got a question? A hand at the back. Hello.
I want merchandise for Europe Gods. Whatever you can pull out, t-shirts, posters.
You had to ask that. It's possible, but I couldn't possibly comment. Oh, I can't. Okay. Okay, one more question. Hello, at the back there. Yeah, it's a developing culture on the moon. Yes, exactly that. Luna. It doesn't have a government. But it's, yeah, I was. I've been reading stuff about Nepalese workers in Dubai. No, sorry, not Dubai, Qatar, building the World Cup stadiums. And like the death rate is atrocious and they have no rights and they pay, you know, the employers confiscate their passports. They're treated as slaves. And I thought that was very, and they can't escape. And at the same time, Enid, my wife, was watching, okay, showing my age. Everyone remember Dallas? Dallas was great. J.R. Ewing, the Ewings, the oil barons and all that. Great, great show. They did a reboot a couple of years back and Enid watched it and I saw a bit of it. And the only good thing was Larry Hagman as J.R. Ewing because he was always great, Larry Hagman. And it was just what I've been reading about the whole thing about the kind of indentured workers building the World Cup. And I've always been interested in moon-based stories. And the whole thing of Dallas and these incredibly rich families engaged in kind of warfare with each other that never ends. And it just all came together. It's put that, plosives, put that somewhere, put that kind of strife somewhere where you can't get out. There's kind of a rule in, well, not a rule, a kind of advisory in television writing that trapped people are always interesting to write about. And the moon is the ultimate trap, which was why I did some research into working on the moon. And at the time of writing, because low gravity eats away at your bones, eats away at your muscle, makes your brain expand, makes your eyes, it's very bad for your eyes. It basically erodes the human body, and over time it will erode the body so much that if you go back to normal Earth gravity, it will likely kill you very quickly, or if you're very unlucky, very slowly. And at the time when I was writing the book, that time limit was 2 years. 2 years on the moon, then you have to decide. You have 2 years to make your fortune. And then you have to decide, do you go back? But if you stay, you stay forever. And with that, you've got a perfect setup for a book. You have everything you need. One small change in the human body that you have to make that decision. Ooh, in the words of The Clash, do I stay or do I go? If you're born there, then you stay there. But if you go there to work, you're working under terrible conditions. You pay for your oxygen, you pay for your water, you pay for everything, but you may make your fortune, but it may kill you. And after 2 years, everyone has to decide, do they stay or do they go back? So in a sense, it's kind of like the ultimate Dubai, Qatar in space, to answer your question. So the short answer is yes. I think are we out of time? We're out of time. Thank you. I didn't have to make you run around the room either. It's been a real pleasure being with you. Thank you very much.
Avete ascoltato Fantascientificast, podcast di fantascienza e cronache della galassia, da un'idea di Paolo Bianchi e Omar Serafidi, con il contributo cibernetico del Cylon Prof Massimo De Santo. Potete seguirci ed interagire con noi sul nostro sito fantascientificast.it, su Facebook alla pagina Fantascientificast, su Twitter sul profilo @fantascicast, sul nostro canale Telegram t.me/fantascientificast, sulla nostra community Telegram t.me/fsccommunity. Se siete particolarmente timidi, potete utilizzare la vecchia, cara e affidabile posta elettronica scrivendoci all'indirizzo redazione@fantascientificas.it. Tutte le puntate sono disponibili sul nostro sito, su Apple iTunes, su Spotify e su Podbean all'indirizzo podcast.fantascientificas.it. Se volete, potete lasciarci una valutazione a 5 stelle su Apple iTunes ed offrirci una birra romulana o un gotto esplosivo pangalattico, sostenendoci tramite una donazione PayPal utilizzando l'apposito pulsante sul nostro sito. Fantascientificast è una produzione amatoriale. Non si intende infrangere alcun copyright, i cui diritti appartengono ai rispettivi detentori. Autorizzazione SIAE 5612I5359. Nessun byte e nessun tribolo sono stati maltrattati durante la produzione di questo podcast. Alexa 4 e l'equipaggio di Fantascientificast vi augurano lunga vita e prosperità e vi danno appuntamento alla prossima puntata lungo la rotta di Kessel.
Settimo simbolo inserito nel computer. Blocco 1 pronto. Blocco 1 posizionato.
Potenza erogata 23%. Così.
Blocco 2 è pronto.
Attivato.
Blocco 2 posizionato.
Siamo al 35%.
Allarme rosso, evacuare l'area intorno allo Stargate.
Liberate l'area, torniamo da voi, chiudo le porta.
Andiamo, sbrigatevi.
C'era quello sotto la grande pietra?
Sì. Mio padre lo trovò nel 1928. È fatto di un minerale che non si trova sulla Terra.
Blocco 5 posizionato.
75%.
Blocco 6 pronto. Blocco 6 posizionato.
Non eravamo mai riusciti ad andare oltre nella sequenza.
Blocco 7 pronto.
Pronto, attivato.
Blocco 7 posizionato.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.